Hello, hello. This is Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I am honored to present today's episode, and it's so juicy that I really just want to get straight into it. Erica Chidi is truly such a gift. Erica is truly a gift. She's been an incredible friend and resource to me. Erica and I first spoke on Naked Beauty back in 2021. We had a whole episode dedicated to intuitive eating, and we had a whole episode about changing your skincare routine depending on where you are in your menstrual cycle. She is just a wealth of knowledge. The knowledge goes deep, and I love the way that she brings her personal experience into the education. It just connects on a deeper level for me. In addition to being a very successful startup founder, I will talk about Loom in a moment. She is an author. Erica's book, Nurture, is considered a must for all pregnant people. But she is also the co-founder and CEO of Loom, which you will hear about. But it is an app and a community that is based on helping women understand their bodies, what is going on, talking about sex and abortions and our bodies in a way that is not taboo. You've heard her. For Naked Beauty listeners that maybe also listen to the Goop podcast, you have heard Erica before. She is truly so phenomenal. But I also just want to say that I always have the best time with Erica because she is a true joy. Like, she has a joyous spirit, which, no disrespect to the intellectuals, I feel like that can be rare sometimes for intellectuals to have the joy and effervescence along with the knowledge. And today's topic is sex, and it's really important to have shame-free conversations about sex. Orgasms are a good thing, something we should all be actively seeking more of. We talk about scheduling sex, arousal templates, so much more. And one of the things that I learned in this episode is about Gottman's 6-second kiss and how it can be used to grow intimacy with your partner. You all are in for such a treat. Let's get into my conversation with Erica. You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms. Okay, Erica Chidi, welcome back to Naked Beauty.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Very excited to have you on. I feel like I do need to read your official, which I don't even have to read. I know. You're the CEO and founder of Loom, which is a well-being platform empowering women through sexual health education.
Yes, indeed.
Also an author and doula and lactation consultant and chef and like wellness expert and podcaster and friend.
Yes, friend.
And skincare enthusiast.
Skincare enthusiast is probably the polite way of putting it. It's more like skin junkie.
It's a safe space for that conversation.
I know. It's so funny when I hear you talk through all the things that I do, I'm like, wow, she does a lot of things. But
you do.
It's like life is short. I'm all about just trying to live your full bliss, even if that means you're moving around. But I think for me, as long as women's health, sexual and reproductive health is at the top of the pyramid, mm-hmm. everything else kind of funnels in or funnels up towards that.
Yes. You know? And you do it in such an inclusive way. In a way that I haven't seen done before. So the stories that you're telling, like with Loom, like talking about abortion in a really frank and honest way, talking about polyamorous relationships, like these are the topics that are seen as maybe more taboo that you're not going to get from like the, I don't know, what to expect when you're expecting app.
No, you're not.
So there's like a radicalness to the sexual health conversations you're having, which I love.
Yeah. And it's been really fun, especially when the app came out last year and being able to go from having a brick and mortar space in LA to having something that anyone in the world can use.
Yes.
And we were app of the day the other day in the Apple store,
congratulations.
Which was super fun and nice little feather in the cap. So it's been really fun and just a real journey to get here. I never thought when I started doing doula work like 12 years ago that I would ever even open a space or write a book or ship an app. Anything's possible.
Yes. I would imagine that doula work gives you like just deep empathy and respect for women and our bodies and what they can do.
Just beyond. I think women's bodies, people that have uteruses that can make humans, it's truly magic. Yeah. And I think there's a lack of reverence and respect for all that it requires to go through the process, however you go through it. And I think doing doula work for a decade, I got to really understand all of the pieces that are there. And just being in a body when you are pregnant is so intense, even if it's good and it's going well and it's what we call a boring pregnancy, meaning nothing super eventful other than the amazing, magical...
yeah, just casual building a human. Yeah,
like, growing kidneys. It's still a trial. But yeah, I am pretty much fully retired from doula work. I occasionally come out for the bestie, the family, and for women I really respect and want to support. It's fun to bop in and out.
Yes, and I've just made you my wellness coach, like my
with pleasure.
Like I call Erica before I like reach out to my OBGYN. I'm like, this is what's going on. Well, usually I'll get the like medical advice first, and I'm like, this is what they told me, and you're like, okay, correct, but you're always telling me how to take it a step further, which I really appreciate. Today we're talking about sex and love and intimacy, but before we do, I want to talk about skincare because I want to know what you're using right now and what you're loving right now. Because I trust your taste so much, and I feel like we have the same taste. Like, we really we bonded over the Vintner's Daughter. Like, if you like it, I'm gonna like it. You know those people?
Vice versa.
Okay, yes, I appreciate. You know when someone gives you like a bad restaurant recommendation, and like it just colors your entire.
Yeah, you're just like I don't know about you. I thought I knew.
You helped me find my chef for the Galentine. I was like, okay, if Erica likes this chef, it's going to be a good chef, and she was incredible.
Camilla,
so
amazing,
so great. So okay, what skincare are you loving now? Like, what is like your go-to? Can't live without. This is it.
So I'm gonna do a little shout out to my friend Anna Zahn, who is behind Ricari Studios. So when I had my myomectomy, I guess almost 2 years ago now, I had a bunch of fibroids removed. I couldn't do anything for about 2 months.
Okay.
And I'm a doer. I like to figure things out. Yeah. I like to keep busy. And Anna was like, why don't you just go to Skin Gym? You can't do much. Just like go to Skin Gym. And I was like, Skin Gym? She's like, yeah, just like do stuff for your skin.
Yeah.
And so I went on this quest to figure out how to really manage my hyperpigmentation and hydration and all of these things. So now what I realize is like my skin just needs a ton of water. It needs a ton of moisture. It's not really an oils situation. It's really about triple cleansing. And
you're speaking, this is my love language. Like we're past the double cleanse. It's like,
no, it's triple.
You have to get your skin so clean every night. I keep telling people this. It's not like washing your face shouldn't take 5 minutes.
Not at all.
It's like a 20-minute, like, time.
It's giving time.
Yes, yes,
it's giving
yes.
dedication. Yes. It's giving... give yourself a good 25 to 30 minutes.
Yes.
And it's giving outside of the shower, which is
1,000%.
Okay.
Yes.
So the thing I started doing was I used to wash my face with my hands. You know, I'd do a couple cleanses. What I didn't realize is like my skin doesn't like that. It needs to be like stripped and then beaten. So now
we're getting into the sex talk early.
Yes, we're getting there early. It's giving stripped and beaten.
Yeah.
So I do a triple cleanse. I was always into Biologique Recherche, but I was on like the P50 tip maybe like 10 years ago, but you know, didn't understand that the line really works well. Like when it's used like in a compound way, like you're using different pieces of it. So now I use their micellar water.
Okay.
And I start with that. And then after the micellar water, I will do, they have a new Late You now that's dermosensitive and not as rich. And my skin really loves that. So I'll do, we'll do a session of that. And then the third cleanse, sometimes depending on what I'm needing, sometimes I'll bop over to Prequels.
Prequel, they just popped up out of nowhere.
I know.
I feel like I get a PR package for them from them every week.
I know. A lot of my derm people like Prequel.
Yeah, I think everything's good I've tried so far.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, where did you all come from?
I know. She just was like, hey, I'm here. But I like it. So I use a little bit of that, or I'll use April Vintner's face wash.
Oh, that cleanser is...
It's so good. If I just want a little, and also if I want a botanical kind of moment, because I love the scent profile. So that's the cleansing piece. The biggest save for me has been those cloth wipes.
The Clean Skin Club towels.
Yes,
I know.
Cult. Yes. Just sign me up.
Just sign up.
Get them. Do it. So using that has been a big unlock for me because now I'm just like stripped super clean. Then after that, I'll do a spray of Tower 28's SOS.
Yes. We love that product.
I'm just like, that is like one of my hero products because it just kills. I'm like, I'm fighting bacteria. That's really what I'm going after for my skin. And after that, I will then do my Dennis Gross LED mask every night.
Oh, wow, girl.
Unfailingly. Every night, sometimes twice a day if I have a lazy day at home and I can do it in the morning, do it at night.
Okay.
Then I go on to...
What have you noticed changed about your skin since you've done the LED masks?
Just... So I hyperpigment. Like, I can just go like that to my skin and it's a mark. And I'm just like, okay, like, I guess this is what we have to do. So I love the LED light for helping to, cell turnover and inflammation management. So I'm not as, like, inflamed. Especially if I do an extraction, that's when I'll double down on the red light. I might do it morning and night to just help move things along. And I love it. I like the flow of it. I like being like, okay, I'm going to do this now. And sometimes I'll do it like for 15 minutes just because I don't feel like being done. And I'm not in the bathroom at that point. I'm like on the floor, like watching TV. And then I go back in the bathroom. Then it's Barbastrum. Am I saying her last name right?
Yeah.
I feel like Barbastrum. Hyaluronic acid.
Yeah, we love that.
Got to do that every night. And then a new thing I started adding is Paula's Choice.
We love Paula's Choice.
I know, which is, I always was like, it felt a little like it was like giving QVC for me. And so I was a little bit like, is this okay?
Not QVC. Paula's Choice has been like a pioneer in terms of the efficacy of ingredients. Like, it's ingredient forward, but like to a very high quality.
Yep. And I'm late. I'm just super late to the game. But they have this depigmentation serum.
Oh, the purple one. The dark mark corrector. I love that. Ugh. Yes.
And just the texture of it is so nice.
Wait, it's on the fact that we have never had this conversation and we use so many of the same products is like freaking me out a little bit.
This is the thing. It's a spiritual vibe. It's spiritual.
Yes.
And I love mixing Barbastrum and the depigmentation serum from Paula's Choice together.
Yeah.
Because then it really just gives a little. So do that. Let that sit. And then I get super dry. And then we bring in our new friend that we've been using for the past 6 months, Tret.
Oh, Tretinoin. Okay.
She's on the Tretinoin train. Now, let me just say a little something to my Tretinoin curious girlies folks. Also to my people that use Accutane many years ago, because I was an Accutane girl.
Oh.
I had to because of all of the pigmentation issues. And Tret wasn't really on the scene in that way because I was in South Africa. And I was like in college when I was using Accutane. Accutane worked incredibly for me. What I didn't like was the dry lips and just
most dehydrating thing ever.
You just look a little crazy when you're on it. You're like, skin is great.
Yeah, your
mouth
skin is
like,
clear.
What's up, honey? Tret, I love because it's giving a lot of the same type of efficacy, but it's topical. And what I realize is my skin loves retinoids. It just is obsessed with it once you get over the uglies, whatever that means, the drink stage. So I'm on the highest dose and I do it every night.
Oh, wow.
My skin wants it. It wants to be.
I mean, your skin looks flawless.
It wants to be beaten. It just wants to be like, give it to me. Take it off. And Vanessa Lee, who I know we're going to talk about at some point, founder, CEO of The Things We Do, was like, really like encouraged me. She was like, some women or some people need just that constant cell turnover. And like, if your skin can tolerate it, go for it. So try every night. And it's been a major game changer. And then if I have a dark spot, I'll use Cosmolan too if I do an extraction. And so this was the thing. So I got introduced to Cosmolan from Vanessa.
I've never heard of Cosmolan.
Okay, people. Let me tell you, it's like a peanut butter mask that you put on for like 8 hours. It has to be applied by a practitioner.
Okay.
And essentially, it's got like kojic acid, it's got some hydroquinone, it's got some retinoid, and it basically just like peels the skin, burns off like that first layer, but it's really focused on hyperpigmentation. It's not for acne. Because I would look at Vanessa's skin and be like, mama,
her skin is insane.
What are you doing? And she was like, I do Cosmolan. And so I think it's from Spain. It's developed in Spain. So I did that 1.5 years ago. And that is really what just totally changed my skin in like its texture and then lifted, I'd say, about 80% of the pigmentation like right off. I think for girls in our tone, like Fitzpatrick, maybe 5, 6, 7, mm-hmm. 8, fabulous for that. Wow. I feel like people who are not in that shade zone don't see as much result, but I'm in love with it. And then Cosmolan 2 is the maintenance cream that you use for the next 3 months. Even after the 3 months, you can just use it whenever you see even a light dark thing coming up, like after an extraction or pimples coming up. I just like put it on there twice a day, moves it along, and it actually creates like a little like a skin flake. It like moves all the melanocytes like off the skin.
Interesting. Okay, I'm definitely going to look into this.
She'll get you on it. I love it. It makes me feel less stressed out about breaking out because I know I can manage it.
Yeah.
And then last two steps are Creme Dura Purifante from By La Chic Rocher.
Yeah.
It's their kind of acneic cream. Okay. So it's super helpful and really moisturizing. And then I'll just like do an occlusive after that, whether it's Aquaphor or Prequels situation.
Oh, I like Prequels.
Put that
occlusive
in.
Kind of Vaseline alternative.
Yeah, souped up Vas.
Yes.
So that's it. That's what's going on. It's definitely some steps. But...
Oh my gosh. Okay. And sex before or after your skincare routine? to segue into today's topic.
Sex after for sure. It's so interesting. I think I feel more sexual when my skin is clean.
Yes.
I have a little bit of anxiety when I'm in bed and I'm like, didn't wash my skin yet. Yeah. And I don't want to come and then be like, okay, I got to go do my skin thing now. And it's happened before and it's not pleasant.
Right.
It's a little like I'm ruining it for myself. I'm ruining what I just experienced by having to get in there.
You just want to lay down and drift off to sleep and relax, not think about doing this 15-part routine and put on your LED mask.
Exactly.
Well, I'm curious, what was your early sex education? Like, how did you first learn about sex? What did it look like in school? Did you have a conversation with your parents about it? Did you learn about it through health class?
It's interesting. I went to high school in South Africa, so there was no sex ed. Okay. I was at an all-girls school, too.
Sweet. No, like, did they tell you that period? Just nothing?
Not really. Okay. It was, like, Anglican, too, so it was very conservative.
Okay.
So I think for me, learning about my body really started with my parents. Mm-hmm. They're both clinicians, and my mom specifically was very kind of hands-on with, this is how you wash your vulva, this is how you wash your armpits, this is what you need to be aware of. And there was like no flap or fold that wasn't explored. So I already had like a good connection with my body that wasn't necessarily like sex positive as we define it today, but just anatomically confident. I was like, I know where this is and I know where that is.
And did she use anatomically correct language? Because I hear a lot of parents talking to their kids about their private parts and they use very cutesy little names.
She used the right names.
Okay.
And I think that's important too. I think when you think about helping a young person protect their body, mm-hmm. the more they actually are able to speak to what their parts are, the more they're able to have more autonomy mm-hmm. over what happens to their body, or if their body is violated, being able to talk about it explicitly and be like, this is where it happened. So I'm a big fan of actual names.
Yes.
But I think in terms of sex education, it was a lot of reading for me, and then porn, truly.
Wow.
I think porn in the way that it was developed when there was still VHSs and DVDs. I'm not that old. I was born in 1986. It was just a different way of taking it in. And so I think combo of like reading lots of health books. I'm still a voracious reader, but I really was when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I feel like when I say voracious reader, I sound like Cat Williams. Let me think about that. I'm like, I read a lot and I still do. And that's where I formulated my understanding of my body. And I was also really experimental. I think I started masturbating when I was like, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8, in there. And I think a lot of people, when they actually drop in and think about it, there usually is, just from a developmental perspective, like some type of awakening during that stage anyway. But I've always enjoyed how sex, pleasure, arousal has made me feel. So it's not something I've really shied away from.
Yeah. And it sounds like you didn't have any shame associated with it. You weren't taught to be, I don't know, afraid of your body or ashamed of having these feelings?
No, not really. It's interesting. I don't know how I bypassed it, to be honest, because my parents are Nigerian immigrants, Catholic, devout Christian, all of that. But I've always just been so single-minded and very just on my own path. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot for me to get deterred from what I feel I like or what I feel I'm interested in. So I think my high conviction around my body and the things I liked protected me from being overly shunted into the shame tunnel. Yeah.
And it's interesting you bring up porn because I'm sure there's been all types of porn for as long as people have been recording themselves having sex, but it does feel like the porn that's produced now is like more violent or more, I don't know. I would imagine that it would be more damaging to see that as a young person now.
I get what you're saying. I think there's a couple ways to look at it. It depends on what kind of porn you're looking at. I feel like on the highly produced end where you're in the world of like Brazzers, there is this like slickness and kind of high intensity hyper-focus on penetration of any kind. A lot of fluids and cum everywhere and shit. And that's not really everybody's experience.
Right.
But then at the same time, I think there's a democratization of porn in the sense that you have like Pornhub community stuff, which looks like you,
it's
your
like a
bedroom.
Shot on an iPhone.
Yeah. And that, I think that from a device perspective feels a little bit more inviting. And then you have these other branches, like there's I Feel Myself, which is this platform out of New Zealand where it's all shot by women and very much from a female or feminine POV, where there's a lot of like great masturbation content and there's a lot of great just like soft porn, and not soft in terms of there's really good orgasms, it feels very real, but it's just the like the mise-en-scene and the energy is very like, oh, this is regulating, I don't mind watching this.
Yeah,
and then there's,
it's
like,
created with women in mind.
Correct. Yeah. And then there's kink.com, where is that is I also feel that content.
Is that based in San Francisco?
It is.
I remember when I was in college, people were like, that's the kink.com building.
It
and I'm
is.
Like, why as college students do you know that?
They should know that. That makes sense. But yeah, in the Folsom, that big brick building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I honestly feel like kink.com's content is really educational and really inclusive in terms of if you are into things that are not vanilla sex, meaning like, you know, just not just the straight and narrow, simplistic, which is nothing wrong. Vanilla sex is not bad. So it just, I think it takes a little bit of hunting.
Yeah.
And then what I also really recommend in terms of porn is like find the actors or porn stars that you love and follow them where they go.
Yeah.
And I think that's
like following your favorite film director or fashion designer.
100%. Like I'll watch anything that like Kate Winslet is in or.
Okay.
I'll,
yeah. I'm like, who are your people? I'm like, let me write down some names.
Honestly, I think, you know, it's been a while for me since I've. So this, and this is another thing too about me coming out later in life. I was, I think I was.
Right. You were married. We've skipped over a lot. Let you tell your story.
I'll do the too long didn't read version.
Yeah.
I think I've always been gay, but that was never okay growing up, especially being like an immigrant child. And so really repressed all of that. And then when I was married, there was more room to kind of experiment. And I think when I was in my hetero stage of life, I consumed a lot of porn. And a lot of the porn, pretty much 99% of it was lesbian porn, because what I was trying to do was get at least at some point in my day out of the situation I was in. And so now that I'm out and I'm with someone that I love and I have an incredible physical sexual relationship with, I don't really watch as much porn.
Right.
It just is not like necessary. And so I think that's a very interesting thing. And that's not a belittling of people who are like, I have a great sex life and I watch porn. You good. I'm not coming for you. I'm really just saying for me, it's been interesting to understand like when I was in the right identity and when I was in the right relationship, what happened to my desire.
That
you know?
Makes so much sense. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. But I always loved like, Jada Fire.
Okay.
Sydney Sin. And I feel like I was talking about this with my fiance the other day. It's like, the porn you watch sets up your arousal template.
Interesting.
And by arousal template, I mean, what are the things that tend to turn you on? Like arousal and desire are two different things. Desire is like actually having the desire, the mental desire, being like, I would like to have sex. Arousal is my body wants to have sex. Like my nipples are hard or like I'm wet or whatever the case may be if you have those parts. And the idea is like you want arousal and desire to meet. Sometimes you can have desire and not have arousal, meaning you're not getting wet or you're not getting turned on.
Right.
Or you can have arousal and like no desire. And arousal without desire is oftentimes the situation where people are put in a environment where they don't necessarily feel safe, which is why a lot of people that have been sexually assaulted can sometimes report having arousal features, having no desire whatsoever. And sometimes there can be a lot of frustration for a new mom, for example, who has a lot of desire, but because they're still breastfeeding or chest feeding, their hormone cocktail doesn't really support arousal, right? So I think that's really important. I feel, and I really take a leaf out of Emily Nagoski's book and just ethos of like, sex drive and libido isn't really a thing. It's really arousal and desire and being able to differentiate between the two and understand where are the deficiencies on either end. And then from an arousal template perspective, like, what are the things that really get your body going? And so I think the porn that you watch will end up setting up your arousal template. And so if you're looking for inspiration, I think that's something to keep in mind. And if you've never thought about it before, think about whether or not certain porn or porn stars or content you've watched has shaped the things that you like.
Yes. And also this whole genre of like audio porn I find so fascinating as well.
100%. I love it.
Yeah, because it can allow your mind to like wander and like make like it divorces the like physical image from it, which I think is really cool. How do you cultivate arousal in your day-to-day life? By yourself or with your partner?
I feel really lucky because I'm obsessed with my fiance.
You have a very cool, beautiful, kind, smart, just like, she's everything.
Yeah. So I'm like a little spoiled in that way where I just, I'm obsessed, want her all the time.
And I feel like she's obsessed with you too, as she should be, right? Like, yeah, you guys are just an incredible couple.
It's very mutual. And also at some point one day, our backstory is wild. So there's always just been this like magnetic pull between us. So I feel really fortunate that I'm always wanting her in that way, and not just sexually. So here's the thing. I think from arousal and desire and just and the wanting of someone for me has a lot to do with what's our intellectual chemistry? What's our like energetic frequency? And I think there's just this, there's these constant touch-ins. I feel like Esther talks about this a lot, that like before sex, like sex as we define it, the whole thing is foreplay. So we're always like holding hands or nuzzling, or I'm like touching her hair when she walks past, or the same to me. And I really also love the Gottman's approach of like, do a 6-second kiss like every day, at least 6 seconds. Because when you go like, you know, it's like there's not like a like an exchange. But when you really take like 6 good seconds to just, even if you're not, no tongue. Just put your lips to lips. There's a down regulation that starts to happen in your body that reminds you that there's a bridge here. And if you want to cross that bridge, you can.
That's beautiful.
You know,
I don't do the 6-second kiss. I haven't even heard of that, which I think is so interesting. But I will, when I feel myself getting stressed, I'll turn to Umut and I'll be like, can you just give me a hug? Like, can we just have a hug? Yeah. And it just makes me feel so much better.
Of course. Yeah. Like, we're like hugging machines. We need that. Most people, most neurotypical people need that contact. And I think for me as a neurodiverse person, I really need like deep pressure. So I love a good hug. I'm like, thank you. But yeah, the 6-second kiss is a way to just create that bridge. And so it's just these tiny little things. Truthfully, she's super busy during the day. She works at an agency and I'm busy too with Loom and the multiple other projects I'm working on. And so, you know, with this relationship, like the phone is not really our thing. So it's a little bit of out of sight, out of mind. And so when we do come back together, we do everything we can to really remind each other that we're in this space. It's a very somatic relationship, even beyond the sex. We're just really present with each other's physical bodies. And there's a lot of gazing. We're big gazers. Like, I'll be walking around the house and just like, when I was leaving this morning, I'm walking out the bedroom and I didn't even look at her, but I noticed when I turned around, she was just like looking at me. Yeah. And we like to hold eye contact, and not in some woo-woo, like I'm like holding your eye contact, but just like really looking at someone like you're not going to see them again, like trying to build that in.
It's so interesting that you're bringing up gazing. I recently interviewed Crystal and Keish. Do you know them by any chance? Mm. They're a beautiful couple. They are in Brooklyn, two women that are together.
Oh, yes, I do know them.
Yes. And they talked about gazing at each other. And I also listened to your interview that you did with Esther Perel on the Goop podcast. And I couldn't help but think, are some of these things specific to two women being together? Because I love my husband, love him down. I don't think that I've ever found myself just like gazing at his body. But maybe there are some women that just like gaze at their husband's bodies. But I don't know. It's, as I heard them talking and then as I hear you talking about your relationship and being that you were married to a man, you think that there's something like inherently different about the way two women experience each other.
So I will say yes, but then I'm going to circle away from that and then come back.
Okay.
So that is true. Non-hetero sexual relationships function differently. But my ex-husband was a gazer.
Okay.
And not just gazer at the body, but really just eye to eye.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think that's the type of gazing that Vatana and I really experienced together as well.
Okay.
Obviously, the elevator goes down and it comes back up. But like at its core, it's really
eye contact.
It's really
being
the eye
present.
Contact.
Okay.
Because also it's just like we're on our screens so much
or
we're driving or we're doing these different things. And so when you take a moment to just look at each other, it just creates some rhythmicity and it helps you slow down.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Looking at your phone all the time, I really do believe it's connected to your overall well-being. You know, I ask everyone on this podcast, when do you feel most beautiful? I interviewed Julie Schott, founder of Starface, and I asked her, when do you feel most beautiful? And she said, it's like on the days where I'm not looking at my phone. Honestly, I feel like every hour you look at your phone, you feel more dysregulated. It just makes a huge difference. And I think one thing that a lot of couples fall into, myself included, is it's been a long day. You've got a lot going on, lots of meetings, kids, just stress. You get into bed and then it's like you pull out the phone, you start scrolling on Reels. And there's something beautiful about being like side by side on your phone, scrolling through Reels, sending each other things, even though you're sitting right next to each
other.
But then you have to put the phone down and like connect.
Yeah, I know. And this is the thing. We are currently in a battle against our phones. Like we are together in this battle against our phones.
Yes.
'Cause it is like that at the end of the day. And having worked in tech and worked at Meta and having myself visibility into building an app, you really are focused on habituation.
Yeah.
You're really trying to understand how do we habituate people into needing to use this at a high velocity.
Yeah. How do we make it as sticky as possible?
Super sticky.
Yeah.
And so they have done that. And it's one of the reasons why I don't use TikTok. I have a TikTok just because I have one just to have it. But I don't go on there because I think Instagram or Meta and even Twitter are a little bit more hemmed in terms of the velocity, in terms of how easy it is to get addicted.
Yeah.
And I knew when I started watching people around me get so sucked in, I was like, oh, this is not even about the content. It's like the product is so well built that you are just there. And it's just like, it's just taking you along. I feel good that I'm not on that drug. I'm just, I'm actually just on the Twitter or X drug for better or for worse.
You know what? I'm surprised you're not on Threads. I feel like you would really thrive on Threads. I love Threads.
I need to think about Threads. I started one and I'll go back.
Come back.
I will come back. I will figure it out. But back to the bedroom thing, something that we've been talking about, Vatana and I, is like, okay, how are we going to kick off this no phone in the bedroom situation? And it was interesting because she told me, she was like, before this relationship, I didn't have my phone in the bedroom. Mm. And I had to really stop and think about it. And I was like, oh, me having my phone in the bedroom and having my phone with me all the time is like a vestige of my doula work because I was on call and I always needed my phone because I didn't know if I was going to have to go to a birth or something was happening. And so that's deeply ingrained. And
I just had such an unlock.
Yeah, please tell me.
Because I was a social media manager for so many years running the at Ralph Lauren Instagram. It's like I literally always had to be on my phone and kind of always checking it. And so it's just like a habit.
Totally. And now the life I'm in, and I don't know, I can't speak for you, I can only speak for myself, there isn't the need for that.
I've built this prison for myself. No one has put me in here.
And it's on your own time and on your own flow. And so I think with our partners, they will pattern match our behavior. And so I feel like she's dialed up her usage and her kind of close quarters with her phone because I do it. And so, you know, I'm really trying to wean myself off of it. Because, like, when I'm on the internet at night, I'm just, like, reading research articles. And I'm, like, just, that's where I'm at. And so
you're better than all of us.
but I'm finding them on Twitter. So I'm having to, like, look through, and I'm saving things. And I'm, like, Carrie from Homeland doing this and whatever. So I want to create a different bedtime ritual that might look like sleeping on my back and mouth taping. I'm, like, really thinking about those things.
I have mouth tape.
That's what I want. That's what I want.
Listen, I have mouth tape and an eye mask. And when you put those on,
it's
over, like,
huh?
It's like putting yourself in a coffin. You're like, we're done.
Wait,
we're done.
I need more. I need more about mouth taping. I'm taking in data points. What is your experience?
I actually have some extra. I can give it to you. So it's interesting. You can still talk with the mouth tape if you really want to.
Okay, so got it. That's good, because she likes to chat.
Yes. I don't know if I feel a huge difference in the quality of my sleep, but I go to sleep quicker because you have no other option.
So that's a selling point for me, because I always sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We thank Allah, God, universe, ancestors. Yes. I sleep. But the thing I have is I panic before I go to sleep. Not a full-blown panic attack or anything, but I'm always, and I've been like this since I've been a little girl, I'm always like, what if I don't go to sleep? What if I don't go to sleep? What if I don't go to sleep? I fall asleep, right? Yeah. So I could lose that frantic energy before falling asleep. I'd like it to be more like I'm passing out.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like maybe mouth tape might give me that.
Passing out, I love that.
Yeah.
Do you ever take magnesium?
I am a mag girl. Yeah. I have a whole mag program. And that's why I do fall asleep. I wouldn't say I'm someone who struggles with sleep.
Yeah.
I just struggle with the phone war.
Yes. I completely relate.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about scheduling sex?
Okay, so it's funny. I do and I don't, right? I think any concept, anything I've talked about today, any sexual wellness framework you're offered, you always have to right size it for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So what's going to fit right for me? I think scheduling sex is not my favorite thing. I think when you have small people, if you've made small people.
Yes.
Different convo.
Yeah.
But when you don't have small people like me, and I feel like I'm saying small people, I'm code for children. If you don't have any, I think scheduling can create like some rigidity that sometimes cannot feel as helpful. And so I think what really is important is just thinking about the rhythmicity of it, the quantity of it, like trying to have sex once or twice a week, having that more as a goal as opposed to we're doing it at this time.
Mm-hmm.
That said, though, a couple conversations with friends recently, it is nice to potentially have a time of day. I have a friend of mine who has kids, and for her, it's got to be in the afternoon. I can't. If it's at night, the kids, I've put them to bed, I made dinner, I'm tired, maybe I ate dinner and I'm just not in the mood to have sex. In the afternoon, like right before drop off is great if my partner's home. And so again, like the little people come in and demand some structure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think without little people, just making sure it's happening. And I think talking about it if it's not happening. And that's my thing. I think communication about sex is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I love talking about how it's feeling. Does it feel good? I love like analyzing an orgasm, not analyzing it to the point that it's not fun, but it's just like, how did that feel? Or that felt so good. Because I do think we don't need to like overly congratulate each other or partners when we're having sex. But I think this acknowledgement of we are able to get there together, I think is such a, I don't know, it's a really tender, private thing that you get to have together. It's a conversation you can't duplicate unless you have multiple partners. And so I always like to dive into the space that's there and talk about what's working and what's not.
Time of day is interesting because I think if you are someone that loves morning sex and your partner hates morning sex, or if you're a low libido person and your partner has higher libido, even though it's not a fixed thing, it kind of changes. But how do you find compromise when maybe you're not on the same page as your partner with preferences?
Yeah, I think it's all about literally compromise. It's give and take. If you're not a morning sex person and your partner is, sometimes you're going to have morning sex.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. That's really what it's about. It's about doing what they want to do when you don't fucking feel like it.
Yeah.
And then they're going to do what you want to do when they don't fucking feel
right,
like it.
Right.
And that's the thing. It's unless you live in a tyrannical home where it's your way or the highway, yep. or there's mental health or developmental health mm-hmm. things that make it impossible for you to meet your partner where they want to be met. You just have to give and take and make sure that there's a nice balance of both of those things. Because I think sometimes like the biggest act of love is surrendering to the thing that you aren't obsessed with. And sometimes by doing the thing that they want, it creates arousal and it creates yes, desire. Because yes. you want, ideally, like you want to see your partner
yes.
happy and mm-hmm. satisfied, and they want the same for you. So sometimes you just gotta push through and then mm-hmm. just make sure that it's equitable and reciprocitous, that they're going to do the same thing.
Yes.
As long as there's no pain, mm-hmm. as long as there's no trauma. I think that's a very different layer mm-hmm. and probably for a different conversation. But if it's more just a psychological, I got to get over the hump on this, creating that elasticity is yes. great.
And you mentioned 1 to 2 times per week. For couples that are at once a month, do you feel like that is always a signal that there needs to be some better communication in the relationship? Or if both parties are like, once a month works for us.
It's really about writing your own rules, yeah. right? And understanding like what does satisfaction really mm-hmm, mm-hmm. feel like in your body? Like, yeah. What does it feel like in your body? When do you know that you're sated? Mm-hmm. And then what does it feel like to feel deficient? I really believe in quality over quantity. And are your sexual experiences, are your orgasms points of resource? So when I say that, what I mean is, if you're not having sex frequently, but when you do come, it's so good and it's so connected and there's eye contact and you're sweating and there's all of this like imprinting that's happening in mm-hmm, your body mm-hmm. so that when you go a month or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. if you close your eyes or hear a certain song or smell a certain scent, all of those feelings come flooding back into your system. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Like once a month is maybe all that you need or all that the relationship can manifest or withstand, yeah. right? And so that's why I always feel it's really about quality, and then it's the ability to just resource from it.
Mm-hmm.
You could be having sex every single day, but it's just fine. It's like using a vibrator. It's like you get there and you're good.
Yeah.
That's also totally good as well. That's totally fine. But I think what I'm trying to lean into is, for people who are like, we don't have sex that often. If the sex is really good and you can resource from it in between, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the frequency thing, when you live in the culture that we do, I find myself always saying this, it's like a broken record. It's not designed for intimacy. It's not designed for time with your partner. It's yeah. about capitalism
right.
and making money
yes.
and going on vacation and eating dinner and putting your kids in school mm-hmm. and achievement. Nothing that really actually helps support like arousal and desire, which is why so much sex happens around, requires the lubrication of alcohol or some mm-hmm. other kind of substance to help you drop in. No judgment, but it does go hand in hand. And so I think we all need to be more gentle on ourselves and understand that like most of the day we are in fight or flight mode.
Yeah.
We're in sympathetic overdrive and the phones are keeping us there. So you're always up here. And to have sex, oftentimes you need to come out of up there, come mm-hmm. out of the sympathetic response, drop into just like a baseline yeah. and then go into parasympathetic response to get there. Right.
Yes.
And most of us don't get the chance to do that state change.
Yes.
Right. We're just flung into one state. And then sometimes when we want to get out of that state, it is when we happen to go on vacation or leave our homes or environments. And then by the time you come out of that state change, you got to go back home.
Yeah.
So I think it's really about learning to do small things that help shift your state. And that's
yeah.
not having the phone in the bedroom. That's exercising or walking. It's a long bath if you have a bath or a
yes.
long shower or a quick shower. Just
yeah.
thinking about what are the things that help
totally.
Jump you out of bed.
And I feel lucky that I have a partner that loves to set the mood, loves to do the candles, put on the great music. Like, he is really into, let's make this a moment for 100%. Us.
When I got to your home, and your husband's clearly an audiophile. He has all this amazing sound stuff. And so I have no doubt he's able to just like...
He's a mood setter.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about relationships and sex when you're in a relationship. Of course, sex can be something incredible when you're just on your own. So I'd love to hear tips you have for how people can cultivate arousal in their personal lives, whether it's through masturbation or just, I don't know, doing a body scrub or taking a dance class. Like, how do you help to guide people through getting in touch with their sexual nature and arousal, even if they don't have a partner?
Yeah, what's interesting for me, I really have always suggested that arousal, desire, sex starts way before any of those things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is about not being disassociated from your body and actually making contact with your body often. So even as I'm sitting here right now, like I was actually dissociated up until I just talked about this right now. And I'm like, oh, I'm in a chair. This is a chair. Okay. My elbows are over here. My butt's here. My legs are crossed. I feel the weight of my shoes. I feel these headphones. It's really about, do I know I'm in a body? Because oftentimes, because we're in this kind of sympathetic overdrive, we're really in just the operational intellectual space. We're just actioning things and we forget that we have this whole system, right? So a big part of it is just remembering that body is there and just reminding yourself.
There are so many times where I'm working and I realize I'm holding my breath.
That's
and
right.
I just like exhale. I'm like, oh my gosh, breathe. You're a person. What are you like? And it's like, just takes like taking a breath to be like, oh yeah, I'm a person in a body that needs to breathe.
That's it.
Yeah.
And even now it's just that small reminder that you are a physical being. And that again, like I said a little earlier, is that's what creates the bridge. It's like, oh, and then being like, oh, do I want to masturbate later? Am I turned on? Do I need that release? Like being able to understand that. And then also being able to understand that and then decide, what do I want to bring into my environment to give me that release? Is this a moment where I'm going to masturbate with my hands? Some people do that, some people don't. Do I want to use a toy? Do I want to watch porn? Do I want to think about the last person I had sex with? Do I want to listen to audio porn? Do I want to just, whatever, read a book that's like a little bit on the romantic edge? I think it's just, if you can start to tap into your body and notice that it's there, that's going to create this bridge to other things that you're needing. And I think too, the most important sexual relationship we have is with ourselves, period. If you don't know what your body needs, again, I know there are people out there who have never had an orgasm, and that's again, a totally different conversation for another time. But I think even beyond having an orgasm, which is not really the end all be all, it's if you don't know what you're needing, you can't find that with somebody else. If that's even what you want, I think we're also in a culture now where there's a lot more room for asexuality, aromanticism, not necessarily needing another person to feel full and to feel sexually satisfied. And so that's really my tip. It's less like you got to do this and this. It's just like you actually have to recognize that you're here and in your body, and then being able to design from there what it is that you really want, which might be like, I don't really feel like masturbating. It's not that I'm not sexual. It's just not what I'm wanting. You know, there's a lot of masturbation pressure, I feel sometimes. Are you masturbating? You should be masturbating. I don't know. This world's super stressful. I don't necessarily want. And that's the thing, too, when you're trapped in a sympathetic response in that fight or flight, it's so hard to masturbate because you're just, I'm too stressed out to even get like, to the thing.
Feeling sexy and stress are just so diametrically opposed. Like the more stressed you feel, the more sex is just, it's like this distant planet, like far away.
Totally.
It's like people have better sex on vacation, to your point, because they're like relaxed for once and like breathing and
all of it,
enjoying their life.
Totally. And the thing, too, is like sex begets more sex, right? The more you do it, the more you want it. So that's also the thing too. It's a little bit of like a, there's an edge to it. It's so if you don't do it at all, you probably really won't want to do it. But if you start putting yourself on a little bit of a nutritional plan of I want to have 1 to 2 orgasms a week, you'll probably find you'll stick with that or start to up that potentially to more. But again, there's no pressure. There's no judgment. I think it's just starting with that. I'm in a body. What does my body need? We always are like, I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. I'm sleepy. I need to go to the bathroom. do I need to have an orgasm? Mm. Do I need physical touch? What does that look like? And I think if you're single, I was actually, so there's two quick stories here. One, I was with a dear friend the other night and she was like moving through something and had talked about how in her relationship there wasn't a lot of touch because they're moving through a potential separation. And so when I saw her, we just like hugged for 10 minutes off and on because I knew that's something that she really needed. And I really wanted to give that to her because that felt good for me. And I remember when I was going through my divorce, I was in New York and my friend Angela and I were hanging out and I was so dysregulated and just so overwhelmed with everything that was going on. And she was just like, I'll just stay over. And she just stayed in the hotel with me and we just cuddled. And it was just so kind and sweet and tender and platonic. And so I think a lot of people are touch starved. So I think if you have friends that you're close enough to that you can lean into for that type of physical touch, we need that as humans. So
touch starved is not something I identify with as a toddler parent.
Oh my gosh, you're touched out. I wrote about that for Emily Oster's newsletter. I was like,
the opposite end of the spectrum. Opposite.
I'm just like, I am good.
I just actually want to be alone.
He's like over here and you're like, I'm hiding behind here. Yeah. But I love you. He's so cute though.
He is adorable. And I love my like hugs and cuddles, but I get a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I love that you're saying a topic for another time because we haven't even shared this, but like you will be coming back to Naked Beauty. This will be a regular thing. We have a whole list of topics, so we're very lucky to have you and your expertise. I'm curious for you in your sexual life, what are you hoping to let go of and what do you want to call in more of?
I think what I'm hoping to let go of is just tension, like feeling like I can't relax enough to drop into my body to surrender to this thing I always love. Right.
Yeah, it's like you know, do it and you're like, oh, I like this.
I love this. Yeah. Why am I not doing this more? So I think it's just getting over that psychological hump. I have OCD diagnosed and so I have a lot of intrusive thoughts and I have a lot of like rumination and perseveration. And so oftentimes I'll be, you know, what's interrupting me is not even my phone. It's just like there's these repeating thoughts. And so I do a lot of like work around managing all of that. But I think for me, my mental health and my sexual health kind of go hand in hand. So just hoping to create more spaciousness for myself to surrender to sex in the way that I want to.
What do you want to call in? What do you want to have more of in your sex life?
I want to call in more play and more rope play. I'm really, and again, with absolute and utter reverence for the art of shibari and the Japanese art of rope tying, what I've noticed and found about myself, especially as I've delved more into my neurodiversity, is I really like constriction. And the constriction for me, and I know Jessamine Stanley's talked a lot about this over the years, as they have been more open about their relationship with ropes and bondage and things like that. It's actually not about any type of discomfort. It's actually about the constriction creating this like organization in the body. And most of the time when I've even dappled in any type of rope or bondage play, it's made me want to go to sleep.
Like in a weighted blanket kind of vibe.
Exactly like that. And so just having the space and time to experiment more and understand like rope textures and different types of ties and not like structures and things
that feels
like that.
A really fun, like months long hyperfixation. Like you could really go down that rabbit hole.
It's definitely giving special interest and could be around for a long time.
That's like really cool. I'm excited for you to explore that more. And final question, which is when do you feel most beautiful lately?
I think I feel most beautiful when I'm lifting. So I started weightlifting a year ago.
Love weightlifting.
Yeah. And like, when I'm doing them RDLs and them deadlifts, I'm like,
love an RDL.
Let's go, honey. Look at you.
Yes.
Doing it. So that's my thing now. I really want to get strong, especially after my surgery. That's the journey I'm on. It's like, I want to build as much muscle mass without it being stressful for others by the time I'm 50. That's my plan.
Yes.
It's all downhill from there. It's hard to keep building more muscle mass after that.
No, I relate to that so much. I think strength training, there's nothing quite hits that same, I don't know, reward center that I get from when I'm like doing a deadlift or doing a kettlebell swing or my RDLs or it just feels so good.
Yeah, I love that we're on that same tip right now because it's good. It's I still love my Pilates and my gyrotonics and my walks, but it's addictive.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Erica.
Thank you for
Can't wait to have
me.
You back. This was such a special conversation and I'm excited to explore and go deeper. I think we have to do like a live conversation here in LA.
100%. That'd be so fun.
You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms. So many incredible takeaways, right? I mean, this episode was just packed with knowledge and information in a way that really connected for me. And there's more, because next week we're diving in with Erica to debunk common myths around sex, and we get some of her sexual wellness product recommendations, so you definitely don't want to miss that. Make sure you're subscribed, and also there are clips from this episode that are going to be on the Naked Beauty YouTube. So if you don't know, Naked Beauty is also on YouTube. So make sure you're subscribed to Naked Beauty. All of the links for all of the products we discuss are always on my Shop My Shelf, which I link to in the show notes. And of course, there's the incredible Naked Beauty Planet community on Instagram. Make sure you are joining along there. And I'll be back next week with Erica, where we are debunking very common sex myths and getting her top products. All right. Thank you all so much for listening. Come enjoy the night. Baby, take a breath.
I just want to find. Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.